You want to be on the inside? We've got you covered. It's the Pinsiders. Joining Jesse on today's show, it's Sam Madison, who may have done a little chirping during his all-pro career with the Dolphins.
Chirp, chirp, chirp. It's okay. Chirp. That's why I love my defensive line, because I didn't have to make many tackles. They did all the tackling, I did all the covering, I did all the trash talking. Chirp, chirp, chirp. Whatever it takes to go on out of their game.
Rounding out the crew, it's John Kingemi, who earlier today made quite the prediction.
The Miami Dolphins made some withdrawals over the last 2 weeks in that bank account, and it was stacking pretty high. It looked good after the first three victories. But right now, you know, you're looking at your balance sheet, and you got to make a move. You have to do something to, you know, improve this team.
Also, in the comment center, we have Tristan Jones. Dr. Jones.
Basically, what they're saying is that this is a form of therapy for them.
Okay.
So I think that sums it up.
Yeah, no, hey, we're here for Finsiders therapy.
It's Dolphins Monday on The Finsiders.
Welcome to the show. Yeah, it is. It's Finsiders therapy again. I don't think there's any question about it, but also there's new news to discuss. Dolphins yesterday, everybody knows, lost to the Buffalo Bills 23-21. And obviously we'll talk an awful lot about that. Plenty to discuss still about the two-point loss to the Buffalo Bills. But in between Joe Philbin's press conference today and the start of the show, the Dolphins made a trade. And in fact, they just announced it officially about 5-10 minutes ago. Bryant McKinney, the former University of Miami standout, and I mean standout, is coming to the Miami Dolphins. He's with Baltimore, hadn't really been playing lately. They traded for Eugene Monroe the week before the Dolphins and the Ravens played. And McKinney, I don't even think he was active in their game, their last game, but he's coming here, and an undisclosed draft pick heading up to Baltimore. John Harbaugh, the coach of the Ravens, said earlier today it was a conditional late-round pick. That's pretty much what everybody would have expected by that. So obviously that opens up a whole new conversation and a whole lot of other things to talk about. We'll do that over the course of the next 2 hours. John Kingemi is here, former Dolphin. Sam Madison is here. Besides trade talk, here's everything else we've got coming up on this afternoon show. We'll dive into this McKinney thing as much as we possibly can. We'll obviously analyze yesterday's game against the Bills, and we'll have the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Joe Philbin, in studio. Also, cornerback Dimitri Patterson in studio, made his return from injury yesterday. Definitely a bright spot in a day filled with frustration, I think, for Dolphin fans. 347-347 if you want to text us. 1-855-GO-FINS if you want to call us. The other way to get in touch is to go to dolphins.com and listen to the show there. Participate in the live chat. Tristan Jones moderating everybody on this Dolphins Monday.
You know, I'm not really a I like the sound of Dr. Jones, but believe it or not, I did not get my doctorate, unfortunately. But I will play the part of psychologist today, I suppose, in here. And Ooby Dooby says, we can always count on the Finsiders for therapy after a loss.
Very
so
nice.
We're here for you guys.
That's the
plan. What we're here for.
We don't want to do
plan.
It too much, though.
Yeah, no.
Kind of had
not
my
too
fill.
Much.
Yeah. I've had my fill. I am full of it the last 3 weeks, but obviously it ain't gonna be the last time. But anyway, we'll get to the game. Obviously, yesterday we'll break that down. Dimitri Patterson, Joe Philbin, both stopping by the studio in the first hour. But let's talk about this trade. First of all, just to get news and notes out of the way, the corresponding roster move in order to keep them at 53 was that they waived linebacker Josh Kadu, mid-round pick last year. Never really panned out. He also was not active yesterday. Yesterday for the Miami Dolphins. So Josh Kadu out, Bryant McKinney in. I think my quick reaction to this one was, I like that they're doing something, anything to shake it up and to just show that, all right, what's been going on up front is not okay. Now, is Bryant McKinney going to step in and start? We'll discuss that. Is he going to be an upgrade? We'll see. But I like that they're not just standing pat and saying, we're going to go with what we've got. It shows at least there's an acknowledgement, you know, on a high level that something needs to be shaken up.
Well, Jesse, the Miami Dolphins had to do something. And we talked about this yesterday in the postgame, Sam, when we were bantering back. Something had to be done. You know, all options are on the table right now for the Miami Dolphins. And that was one of the options of going out throughout the NFL and trying to find somebody else that maybe can do the job at the tackle position. Now, whether Bryant comes in and he starts right away or Bryant comes in and he's a week away, I don't know how that's going to play out. But the Miami Dolphins have to do something because, Ryan Tannehill is getting hit far too many times in a football game. Now, whether that's lack of awareness on his part, bad protection on the offensive line and the tight end and the running backs, or a combination of both, something had to be done, and the Miami Dolphins are trying to improve and trying to get out of this three-game snap, this skid, the losses that have been piling up, and they have to find a way to make plays at the end of a game. And if you're depending on pass protection when you're throwing the football in that situation to try to end the football game, it has to be better, and you should expect better. So the powers that be, Jeff Ireland and Joe Philbin, finally decided they needed to go out and make a move, and Bryant McKinney was available and not being used on the Baltimore roster. He was inactive, a healthy scratch, I believe, over the last couple of weeks. So you hope that he's in shape. You hope that he can come in and make an impact, because the Miami Dolphins are in dire need of improving themselves up front.
Yeah, you have to improve, and going out and getting Bryant McKinney is going to help a little bit, but you still have to worry about and think about there's still going to be some holes on that offensive line, so you're still going to have to address those things. Dallas Thomas, he's on the bench, somebody that we thought that, you know, could come in and give us some help and lift us, and once the season starts to progress, you will see these guys coming in and out, you know, being that eligible offensive lineman to come in and help get the running game going, a spark that we really needed. But, you know, none of that was there because the coaching staff, they can't depend on or rely on these guys. Mm-hmm. And you see the move that, you know, we made with Josh Kadu, somebody that Coach Philbin talked about during the preseason that was looking forward to having a great season. They're not coming on. So you have to make a big splash. They did it. And hopefully this will help us out through the course of this season. And maybe if Bryant can play the way that we know that he can play, you know, he can be that anchor for us for at least two more years till we find that offensive line that we really can, you know, say, hey, this is the guy that can help protect Ryan Tannehill, because they are getting to Ryan too quickly, too fast. He doesn't even have any time to really set his feet.
Yeah,
and
no doubt.
And it's starting to become psychological, because when he does have time, you know, he thinks that clock that he has to get rid of it. But, you know, it's going to fix. It's going to help. Now everybody else just got to believe, and they just got to go out and just get it done.
All right, let's do a little Bryant McKinney trade FAQ, frequently asked questions. Here's a lot of what I've been seeing on Twitter the last hour or two since this kind of popped out there. One, people want to know if he's going to play on Sunday. I would say we've got no idea. I'll tell you this, though. When Baltimore and Miami played a few weeks back, they traded for a tackle, Eugene Monroe, that week. He mm-hmm. did not play on Sunday. But it always depends on the guy, the scheme, his familiarity, his comfort level, and all of that kind of thing. So I don't know. We'll see as time goes on. I don't know that we'll be able to answer that question until at least a couple of days from now. The other part of that, of course, is if and when Bryant McKinney does play, where does he play? And that's an interesting question, because his entire career right. in the NFL, he's been a left tackle. And the Dolphins are invested, obviously, in Jonathan Martin, a second-round pick last year, who last season played right tackle, this season and in college played left tackle. And they're trying to lock him in at left tackle, trying to make him comfortable at left tackle. So do you pick Jonathan Martin up and move him back over to the right side and kind of force him to readjust on the fly? Or do you take the veteran guy who's never played, I don't think, right tackle at the NFL level and stick him there? This is, again, assuming Tyson Claybaugh is the odd man out. And I think, you know, at this point, it's kind of fair to look at it in that way. A lot of questions, and obviously the answers will crystallize a little bit as this week and maybe next week goes on, but I'm not sure what the plan of attack is there.
I don't think you play Bryant McKinney at right tackle if he's never played there before, because that's a different animal. At least you have a versatile guy in Jonathan Martin that played a lot of snaps last year at the right tackle position and moved over when Jake Long was injured at the end of the year. Now he had a lot of snaps. He had all training camp, all the whole offseason, you know, the games that he's played so far during the regular season on the left side. But I'm not so sure you stick a guy, I don't care how much of a veteran he is, he's got those steps ingrained and those pass protections ingrained on the left side. You're asking for a big question mark if you ask him to come in not knowing the grasp of the offense, not knowing what he's doing on the right side, and you allow him to play there. I just don't know. I think there's a lot of questions that will be answered, as you said, Jesse, as we move along during this week. But if it were me, if it was Ryan Tannehill, I'd want him to play where he's most comfortable, and if Jonathan Martin's the flex guy, to move over.
Yeah, put him where he normally fits, and let's find the next best four offensive linemen to help fill this, what the patches really need to be.
Nah, very interesting. By the way, I got this text just now at 347-347, and I've seen some version of this a lot this afternoon. He said, they should have made this trade 2 weeks ago. Everybody knew it except the people in charge. trades don't necessarily happen automatically.
Correct.
I mean, now, if you had your ears open or your eyes open the last couple of weeks, there were rumblings about the Dolphins looking to make a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Some people thought maybe it was going to be a running back. Some people thought maybe it was going to be an offensive lineman. I would say sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. And I wouldn't be surprised if this had been discussed over the course of the last couple of weeks. Sometimes maybe you're haggling over what it is. Sometimes you just want to wait to the last possible moment to pull the trigger. Yes, maybe in an ideal world you do it during the bye week. But I would say these things don't always come together over the course of one phone conversation. Now, sometimes maybe they do, but I would say you're kind of short-sighting the situation if you think that maybe they didn't try this at any other point. Another thing, another criticism I'm hearing a lot of today is that, oh, they could have had him in free agency, and now they had to give something up. First of all, they're giving up a late conditional draft pick. It's not that big of a deal. Second of all, for all you know, he turned down the Dolphins to go back to Baltimore in the offseason. So maybe they couldn't have signed him. And maybe they had a number, and that was the number they were comfortable with Bryant McKinney, and that's it. And he chose to go back to the Ravens. So we don't necessarily know everything, remember, and you got to keep that in mind. Behold an island paradise, just a short flight from Florida. Behold the Bahamas. Visit Bahamas.com for deals and packages today. We'll take a break when we come back. Cornerback Dimitri Patterson, great to see him back on the field yesterday. We'll join us in studio. Gut check time for this team. We'll talk to Dimitri about that. You're watching the Finsiders on Fox Sports Florida, and you're listening on Dolphins.com. And the Finsiders Radio Network.
It's the Finsiders with your host, Jesse Agler.
Welcome back to the Finsiders on these Dolphins Monday, taking a look back at yesterday's game against the Buffalo Bills. A bright spot certainly was the return of Dimitri Patterson to action. The veteran cornerback injured, out for about a month, back on the field, and now back in the Finsiders studio, which we appreciate. Thanks, man. How nice was it to get back out on the field and just be able to play in a game again?
It was good. It was a great feeling just to be out there and, you know, just moving around, you know, being my normal self. As opposed to not being normal, if that makes sense,
sure.
These past 4 weeks. So it was a great, great feeling.
Obviously, to a certain extent, when you're coming back from an injury, you got to ease back into it a little bit. You're not going to necessarily play the same number of snaps, all those kinds of things as from before the injury. Is it kind of hard, though, to have to like put the governor on and slow yourself down at times?
Yeah, it is. Initially, you know, you're gauging yourself. You're taking it slow. But as the game continues and the game progresses, your natural instincts and movement start to take place, and but you still have to, you know, proceed with caution and still play under control because you haven't played in a while and you don't want to have any setbacks.
How frustrating was that time not being able to contribute and be out on the football field? I know as athletes, you always want to be at your best. That means 100% mentally, 100% physically. That must have been a tough time for you because you fought so hard to get where you were at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it was extremely tough. You know, coming out, you know, everybody has a vision of how they want their season to be. You know, from a production standpoint, from a health standpoint. And the reality is, most of the time, it doesn't go your way. So you just have to adjust and make the best of whatever happens that's out of your control. Obviously, this injury snuck up on me. It came out of nowhere. And you have to just choose what mindset you want to have during that process. And it could be the positive one or a negative one. So I just chose to have a positive mindset.
That's a wise and mature approach for an injury. And we're talking to Dimitri Patterson. Do you think you'd be able to have that approach 5 years ago? You know, maybe when you were younger in the league, or is that something you sort of learn as time goes on?
It's tough. It's tough when you're young and you're unproven.
Sure.
Because there's always that sense of urgency of, I got to get on the field. I never know when my opportunity's coming. So I have to be ready for it. And when it does come, I have to be productive. So that plays a really, really big part in you rushing an injury, coming back, or playing through something that you really shouldn't play through that could, in the long run, you know, make matters worse physically. So, yeah, that it is tougher.
It's something that I don't think anybody ever talks about when there's a young guy injured, but it makes perfect sense that it would factor into the whole thing. Dimitri Patterson returned yesterday, 3 solo tackles, also a sack, really nice sack, at a big key point late in the game. Take us through the play. It was fun seeing you just kind of flying out of there, and I don't know if they ever saw you really good.
Yeah, it was one of those things we had been working on all week. Once we saw a certain set that Blitz was going to be on, and I had paid attention to the snap count all week, so I figured if I ever got an opportunity to blitz, I had a good feel for the snap count.
I know that it was a tough game yesterday, a tough loss against the Buffalo Bills. What's the mindset of this team now? Because in the NFL, I mean, you really have to put that behind you and try to get back on the winning track. So what's the mindset now, not only for you, but maybe the guys on the defensive side of the football, because you have a big challenge now going on the road and facing one of the best quarterbacks in the league in Tom Brady?
No doubt about it. I think that the mindset, I mean, around the room and in the defense, is everybody understands that they understand the big picture. And when you look at the big picture and you see how the teams are playing, the other teams are playing in the AFC East, it's all competitive. But the good thing about it is we're in it.
Right.
And you know, and that's out of all things, you can look at all the negatives, so forth and so on. But I think the bottom line thing here, which is very positive, is that we're in it. And truth be told, it's in our hands. We don't have to, you know, we're not in a situation where we depend on other people. At this moment right here, it's in our control to go out and do what we need to do to put ourselves in a position to be a playoff contender. And that alone, you know, should motivate and encourage guys to come out with the right mindset at practice and, you know, moving forward here on out.
Cornerback Dimitri Patterson is here. You were saying that after the game last night in the locker room, a lot of football left. And I mean, it sounds simplistic, but it's absolutely true. And as you said, you look at the standings, you look at the numbers, this thing is far from over at this point.
No doubt about it. I mean, it league-wide, it's competitive. And if you look at the AFC East, the New York Jets are playing well. The Patriots are a good team. Buffalo's not an easy team to beat. So it's extremely competitive. And at the end, like you just said, it's a long season, which is a good thing because, sure, like I said, our future's in our control. As long as we go out and do what we need to do as a team, we can position ourselves to be standing tall come late December, early January.
Is it different for you as a corner when you face a guy like Tom Brady, where you know he's not going to really beat you with his legs, but he's going to beat you more by buying time in the pocket? Does that alter the way you guys cover? Because when you face a guy that's maybe a little bit more athletic, you always have to worry about escapability. Mm-hmm. When you go up against a guy like Tom Brady, does that alter anything you guys do? Maybe stay in coverage a little bit longer because you know the ball is either, one, going to come out on time, or he's going to try to buy time and hold it as long as he can to deliver the football. Does that change anything for you guys on the corner?
I think when you look at Tom Brady and what he brings to the table and what separates him and the four or five other elite quarterbacks in the NFL is their mindset and their cerebral capacity. When they break the huddle, they have a certain mindset and mentality as far as their progression is concerned when they're ahead of the defense, and that alone gives them kind of an advantage. When you're playing a quality quarterback like Tom Brady, to really outside of competing and just doing your job, but to get ahead of him, you have to have the same mindset that he has. Like, he looks at formations from a defender, you have to look at the formation, and you know, and that pushes you in a greater, you know, gives you a greater chance to be successful. You come out, you see certain sets. At the end of the day, he's a great quarterback. He has a great arm. He's extremely smart. But you know what? He still has to play within what that scheme is. So when you look at tape, and if you had that mindset, okay, yeah, he's a great quarterback, but what are they doing? And what are his limitations within what they're doing? So when you have that mindset, I'm telling you, you'd be extremely competitive.
It's a great understanding of how a veteran, intelligent defensive player kind of approaches a situation like this. We're talking to Dimitri Patterson. One last thing, and it's kind of about yesterday, but it's really about the season as a whole. Mm-hmm. You said after the game, you know, finishing has been the difference. You know, in the first 3 weeks, the Dolphins were able to finish. You know, really just the one game that wasn't tight at the end. And it just shows you the margin in this league is so razor thin, and it almost doesn't matter who you're playing. It seems like every week, and you look at New England, you mentioned this, every game they've been in almost has been a tight, close game. And it's just about making that one or two plays late, whether it's offense or defense, and that seems to be the difference most weeks.
No doubt about it. Even if you look at the New Orleans game, we're going to halftime. I think that score was 14-10, if my memory serves me correct. We have two minimal mistakes on defense, and then we're down by three. And we're never able to recover. You know, it's such a mental game. And as much as it is physical, it's mental as well. But, you know, when you look at yesterday, if you look at around the league, most games are won within the last 6 minutes.
That's true.
That's the reality of the situation. And whoever can make those critical plays within those last 6 minutes and finish those games within 6 minutes. Those are the teams that, you know, that come out successful, no doubt. Because, you know, coming out of halftime, you still have two quarters left, you know, unless it's just a outstanding margin. But we seen the game last night with Denver. I mean, a team is never out of it. And the team that finishes within those last 6 minutes, that team, you know, probably is going to come out with the W.
Really good insight from the inside. Dimitri Patterson, it was great to see you back out on the field, man. Wish you the absolute best moving forward. And thanks for coming in, man.
All right.
There you go. All right, Dimitri Patterson. Dolphin fans, remember, you can head to Dave & Buster's in Miami Friday night beginning at 5:30 and help the Dolphins cheerleaders and TD kick off the NFL weekend. Eat, drink, and play at Dave & Buster's. Thanks again to Dimitri Patterson. We'll get to some of your questions when we come back. You're watching the Finsiders on Fox Sports Florida, and you're listening on Dolphins.com and the Finsiders Radio Network.
Now, back to the Finsiders, your all-access pass to the 2013 Dolphins.
Welcome back to the show. Sam Madison and John Congem here talking about yesterday's game against Buffalo. Thanks to Dimitri Patterson for stopping by. Joe Philbin will join us in studio next segment, talking about the loss to the Bills, also about the trade today of Bryant McKinnie, Dolphins sending a late undisclosed conditional pick, something like that, to Baltimore for the veteran tackle. Kind of up in the air whether or not he'd be ready to go this Sunday. If I had to guess, I would say no, but you never know. So we'll kind of have to wait and see on all of that. Let's get to some fan questions. Remember, you can text us at 347-347. We'll go now to the Metro PCS Comment Center. Tristan's been chatting with everybody online at Dolphins.com.
I sure have. And as you can imagine, a lot of questions about Bryant McKinnie. And Myron in Texas, he says, why don't the Dolphins play Nate Gardner instead of trading for Bryant McKinnie? Or, you know, what does that say about Dallas Thomas?
Yeah, I mean, I think it says the same thing about Dallas Thomas and Nate Gardner and everybody else on the roster at these positions, in that they didn't think any of those guys at this time were an upgrade. Part of that could be that they like Nate Garner's availability, you know, at multiple different positions. But I would have to think, guys, I mean, and this is just common sense, if last week they said Nate Garner's going to give us a better chance to win at right tackle than Tyson Klebo, then Nate Gardner would have started at right tackle.
Yeah, I definitely say I agree to that, and that's what we were talking about off the air. You know, you look at the offseason, the bye week, I'm sorry, and you see the time that they had. They were going to try to experiment with some guys and see what was the best fit of those five guys up there. And obviously, they came out with the same recipe. But, Jesse, you know, to really answer you guys' question about, you know, it's Monday, and they just acquired Bryant McKinnie. You know, practice is going to start probably for Bryant as soon as he get here, because they're going to give him the playbook and give him all the information. We saw it last year. We picked up Dimitri Patterson. He came in on a Monday, Tuesday,
yeah, you're right,
and he ended up starting. So look for Bryant McKinnie. If the Dolphins coaches feel that, you know, he's in shape and he's ready to go, look for him to be out there starting against the New England Patriots.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough turnaround for him, you know, because he has to learn. Well, number one, where is he going to play? Is he going to play the left side? Is he going to play the right side? Is he going to get that opportunity this week? You know, you don't go out and make this deal unless you're bringing Bryant McKinnie in, because unless he's going to play and as soon as possible. But you hope that he's in shape. You hope that he's up to, you know, being that Pro Bowl mentality, that Pro Bowl player that he is, at least for the extension of this year. You know, he has a lot of experience underneath his belt, 152 starts in his career. You have to be able to feel confident that you can come in and plug him in right away and play. But it doesn't say a whole lot for, you know, you would think that Nate Gardner, I was so impressed with Nate's versatility.
I know, right?
And the way that he comes out and his demeanor. You would think that he'd be the guy that people would tap on the shoulder to say, hey, it's your turn now. You know, it's your time up. Maybe there's an injury there. Maybe there's something that we don't know about.
He did play a couple snaps yesterday. Nothing extensive.
But maybe just to get, you know, to have the faith and the ability of sticking a guy in there and making him play 62, 65, 70 snaps in a football game. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just like him as the swing guy in case somebody gets hurt in another position. You don't want to expose him out at the right side and then not have any confidence if somebody else goes down. Because if you lose another guy, so let's say, you know, let me knock on any piece of wood I can find, you know, if something were to happen at the center position, you need Nate to be able to play for the rest of the season. So, you know, you don't want to expose maybe that to an injury. But it's paramount right now. The Dolphins had to do something at the tackle spot. They come out and they get Bryant McKinnie. And now let's see, you know, how fast he can get up to speed and play.
That's the key thing. How fast can he get out there? By the way, I apologize. Gardner did not take an offensive snap, but he did take some special team snaps. So pretty much the same work as usual for Nate Garner in the game yesterday. All right, obviously a lot of questions about the offensive line, questions involving the trade, questions not involving the trade. We'll get to many of those as time goes on. Joe Philbin is going to join us next. Now, a little bit of a disclaimer here. This trade was made in the afternoon. The interview with Joe Philbin was taped this morning, or at least earlier in the afternoon than the trade was announced. So no conversation upcoming with Joe Philbin about the trade for Bryant McKinney because the interview was taped prior to people finding out about the trade. So just so you know, if you don't hear anything about the trade, that's why. Plenty of other good stuff, obviously, in the conversation with Joe Philbin, but nothing on the trade. The conversation was taped prior to that. Join John Offerdahl and 25 Dolphin Legends at the Gridiron Grill-Off Saturday, November 9th. Visit gridirongrilloff.com for tickets and information. We'll take a three-minute break, and on the other side, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Joe Philbin, will join us in studio. You're watching the Finsiders on Fox Sports Florida, and you're listening on Dolphins.com and the Finsiders Radio Network.
Now, back to the Finsiders, your all-access pass to the 2013 Dolphins.
Welcome back to the Finsiders on this Dolphins Monday. Looking back at yesterday afternoon's game against the Buffalo Bills. Time for the Coach Philbin Show, presented by EverBank. EverBank, your home for banking, lending, and investing. Big thanks to Joe Philbin, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, for joining us in studio. Obviously, a tough loss yesterday, Coach. Everybody knows that. What's the message to the team now as you kind of try and pull everybody up and focus on the New England Patriots?
Well, we have to, you know, believe in the strength and chemistry and character of our players at this particular point in time. We're obviously disappointed in the result from yesterday's game, the outcome. And we just need to improve. We need to go back to the basics. There's nothing magical that we can do or say right now. We've got to go back to work and begin our preparation to play a very good New England team.
What's kind of at the front of your mind right now coming out of that game yesterday? Is it turnovers? Is that sort of the main thing you think coming out?
Well, that was certainly a huge part of the game, but we have to play better at the end of the ball game. We have to play better in the fourth quarter. We did some good things at the end of the first half. We came out strong in the second half, but we didn't sustain it in the fourth quarter. As I told the team, there's going to be a number of games I can't pinpoint out of the 10 remaining we have on the schedule, how many are going to be decided in the last couple of minutes. But clearly, we have to do better at the end of the ball game.
Coach, you mentioned the end of the ball game and the last turnover really turned the football game in the Buffalo Bills' favor. When you go back and you watch that play, what did you see happened on that play?
Well,
the breakdown.
I have to give credit to Mario Williams, a very good player. He had a good pass rush move on that particular play. We felt it was second and eight near midfield, and they still had three timeouts left and a two-minute warning as well. I believe we snapped the ball with 2 minutes and 57 seconds left. So we knew they were playing a bare defense. We felt we could call a pass play and, you know, a five-step drop and get the ball off on time, but obviously that didn't happen.
There's a lot of things offensively that changed maybe for the Miami Dolphins a little bit more movement with Ryan Tannehill in the pocket. We saw some pass protection, maybe the tight ends and running backs in a little bit different mode. Did you see that those adjustments were helpful for the offense getting on track yesterday?
I think so. We felt good about our protection. Our quarterback still got hit too many times, John. I mean, we didn't have as many sacks as we usually have. However, he got hit too many times. So we have to have a cleaner pocket for him to, go through his decision-making process and throw the football so he can follow through, step into his throws, have the proper velocity on the ball. So while we did, on paper, he didn't get sacked as much. And we did, at times, vary the schemes a little bit, but it wasn't really a dramatic shift.
Talking to Joe Philbin about yesterday's game against the Buffalo Bills, a bright spot certainly seemed to be Brandon Gibson, 5 catches, 40 yards, and 2 touchdown receptions. Very effective, especially in the red zone. It was kind of nice to see him emerge in a role like that.
He ran a really nice route on that, the one touchdown where we isolated a linebacker and we got the right coverage that we were anticipating. And, you could see some of the real start-stop ability that Brandon has. And he just has a really nice feel for coverage. And he was able to get himself open, and then he did a nice job on the run after catch as well. And then the second touchdown pass was a good extension of the play by Ryan. And once again, Brandon, you work the scramble drill and you train it and you teach it, but he sometimes just kind of has that knack of knowing where he needs to be, and he's kind of a term we use is quarterback friendly.
Another guy that has a knack for maybe getting behind defenders is Mike Wallace. We saw the 46-yarder Tannehill to Wallace down the right side, and that tandem seems to be getting closer to being able to connect down the field. And we also saw that set up some points before the half, and I know that's very important for this offense to keep building on.
Yeah, well, it was a good, you know, good execution on the route by Mike, and as you just mentioned, Johnny, he got behind the defense on that particular play, and it was a good throw, by Ryan. You know, spacing and the timing of the throw, as with any pass, is critical, but especially those deep ones, putting it in the right spot, and we were able to do that on that particular play.
We saw 25 snaps out of Deion Jordan yesterday. Certainly felt his presence at times. It kind of seems like every week he gets a little bit more comfortable. We see a little bit more out of him. He's out on the field a little bit more most weeks, it seems. How's the development of the number one pick going at this point?
Well, I think the thing you're noticing probably, Jesse, is his play speed, and that's something that as a young player you want to see steps in the right direction. I think he's playing faster, and we believe it's a function of the increased practice time that he's had. He's more familiar with things. He's getting a little bit more comfortable with his job responsibilities, and we're seeing some more productivity as well.
Coach, I know we always talk about turnovers, and you want to win that turnover battle, but sometimes a penalty can equal maybe the same result as a turnover, and that one on special teams hurt the Dolphins yesterday because it gave up field position that was valuable in a tight football game.
Well, we had a chance. We punted the ball from the 10-yard line, if I'm not mistaken, John, and we downed it on the 16, and it was still rolling,
yes,
potentially, so it could have been further. So it was, I want to say, a 74-yard punt, and I think we eventually ended up losing 40 yards of field position. So it was a big thing, and that was, I believe, the only time that their offense got the ball in the end zone on a touchdown drive yesterday was that 44-yard touchdown drive. So as you mentioned, it certainly was a critical play in the game.
All right, let's turn our attention to Sunday coming up, the New England Patriots on the road. Obviously, they've been the class of the division for some time now. What have we seen from the 2013 New England Patriots so far?
A lot of the same things. First and foremost, they're a smart football team. They're very well coached. Obviously, they have some good players at a variety of different positions. But I think you see the same formula. They're good on the takeaway, giveaway margin. They're always good there. They don't get penalized a whole lot, and they don't beat themselves very often. And that's the one thing that I think when you play them, you realize, and you have to be able to, you know, have your team play in a very similar fashion.
Obviously, one of the first things you think about when you talk New England Patriots is their quarterback, Tom Brady. Now, he's coming off of two straight weeks without a touchdown pass, and that puts a smile on all the Dolphin fans' faces. But they're still putting up points, Coach. And, you know, what's happening around Tom to make that offense still be able to put points on the board?
Well, when they're most effective, they still have that balance. You know, they're still able to run the football some. You know, they're able to throw a screen here, a three-step here, play action, go empty the next sequence, and get their tempo going. And, you know, they're best when they're moving the chains and taking their spots to hit a big, big play. That's when they really get their offense rolling. And there's still some signs of that, probably from, you know, hasn't been as consistent as they'd like it to be, but certainly there's a lot of evidence of it on film.
Gillette Stadium. They're 3-0 there this year. You've had a couple of opportunities to go up there now, including last year. A little bit of a break in the weather, maybe going in October as opposed to December. But what kind of place is that to play? What are some of the challenges presented, aside from, obviously, the 22 guys that are going to be on the field for them?
Yeah. Well, they have a good atmosphere for a game day. They certainly have a good crowd. That'll be something we'll have to deal with. But I think the big thing is we have to go up there prepared to play our best game of the year. And if we do that, some of those other secondary things aren't that big of a deal. And, you know, the game, we know we go up there once a year. We know we have to deal with the crowd and the location and those type of things. And that's just kind of life in the National Football League when you're in the AFC East. And so that's never, ever going to change. So we really got to focus on ourselves and going up there and playing as well as we can.
Makes a lot of sense. Dolphins and the Bills, that page is turned. Dolphins and the Patriots coming up on Sunday. Coach, really appreciate the time. Have a great week.
All right, Jesse and John, thanks.
Thanks, Coach.
Very much. All right, Joe Philbin Show presented by EverBank, your home for banking, lending, and investing. We'll take a break. Plenty more to come on this Dolphins Monday. You're watching the Finsiders on Fox Sports Florida, and you're listening on Dolphins.com and the Finsiders Radio Network.
We return to the Finsiders now.
Welcome back. Sam Madison, John Congemi are here. Looking back, yesterday's two-point loss to the Bills. Also at today's trade, Bryant McKinnie acquired. See how he gets into the mix on the offensive line. Remember, you can text us at 347-347. Angry texter right now. This one guy, he's all fired up, which is understandable. Hey, I get it. He's not really giving us anything to work with as far as answering a question or a comment.
Just
on the
venting.
Air. He's just venting, which I appreciate. We can't clean the mess up, he's informed us. The three of us. It's very true. We cannot clean up any mess. That's not what we're here for. We're just here to talk about it. New Mexico Dolphin texted in, how do we lose to the Bills after a bye and then expect to beat New England after they lose? Please talk me off the ledge. This bye week thing I want to talk about a little bit, because all of a sudden in the last 24 hours, there seems to be a sense from the fan base that teams never lose after the bye. I don't know where that came from. I know Andy Reid's Eagles teams had great success after the bye for a lot of years. I just remember that because it was a thing. But in what universe do teams always win after their bye? I get that in your brain you're saying to yourself, hey, they got 2 weeks to prepare for this team. But, like, that's not necessarily literally true. There are days off in there. There's a lot of self-scouting that goes on. It's not like they're dedicating twice as much preparation to the Bills than they did Baltimore in the previous week. You're not supposed to, quote-unquote, win after your bye. Obviously, you want to win after your bye. You want to win every week. But I don't know where this thing developed where, like, you had an extra week, so you were supposed to win. That's not how this works. And, in fact, I can tell you that in the last 9 years now, the Dolphins have alternated wins and loss after the bye. It's not an automatic win by any stretch of the imagination.
Definitely not an automatic win, and you have to go and look at the other team as well. Those guys, they just finished playing a game, so they're in game mode. You have to get yourself and your body back into game mode. Yes, like you said, with the new CBA, you can only have so many practices, and in the rest of these guys, they have to have days off. So Coach Philbin has to put everything that he's trying to get conveyed to the football team about coming back for the next week, getting prepared, into probably 1 or 2 days, and then those guys are gone from here. So, you know, when you're looking at the bye week, you want those guys to get healthy, you want them to become fresh, and you want those guys' mindset to come back like, hey, this is the second part of the season after this bye week. Let's go have a little rest with your time, with your family. But when you come back, turn it up. And, you know, in the pregame, what I wanted to see from this football team is this guy, are the guys start fast? And that's not what I got. And it picked up in the second half. But second half sometimes is going to be too late when you're playing some very good football teams. And, you know, don't look at, you know, coming out of bye that it's automatically supposed to be a win. No, it's not. Because the other team, guess what? They're getting prepared to try to knock you off.
I think the only thing the bye does for you as a player, it gives you your body time to heal.
Right.
I mean, that's the biggest thing. If the Dolphins were injured and guys that were nicked, and there were plenty of those guys, it gave them time. It gave time for Cam Wake to at least play 20-plus plays in the football game. Whereas if that was a regular game without the bye week, he probably sits out another week. So I think that's the biggest thing. And for the coaches, you have to remember, not only do they have New England coming up, but they have the Cincinnati Bengals coming up on a short week. So I'm sure they got on the fast track a little bit to get a little game prep for Cincinnati, because that's going to come on a short week. So you do multiple things on a bye week. The one thing, Sam, that we maybe agree on is that you wanted to see the Dolphins start a little bit faster in the game, a little bit cleaner in the football game, and that definitely didn't happen.
There was some sluggishness there. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And it was kind of like, whoa, 14-0 before you knew what hit you. Now, all that being said, the Dolphins had a lead late in the game,
right,
and that's why we spent so much time talking about what transpired in the last 6 minutes or so. All right, let's go inside the Dolphin locker room, hear from the players on this day after the game against Buffalo. We'll start with wide receiver Brandon Gibson. He had a big day yesterday, 2 touchdown catches, and he discussed turnovers being obviously very costly to Miami yesterday.
If you look at that, that's probably where the game's won and lost. We give them the ball in certain situations, and there's no doubt about it, they're going to put up points. And we got to do a better job, and that's something we emphasize. And, you know, I think as a whole, we can do better. We just got to continue to work on it and make sure it's something that we don't do to win and can help us win games.
It was a mistake-filled afternoon for the Dolphins. Not just the turnovers, not just the pick six. All of those things were huge, obviously. The penalty on Don Jones on the punt, it ends up being a 40-yard swap of field position, basically. It was not a clean game by any stretch.
No, anytime you lose the turnover battle, you probably have a greater chance of losing that football game. It's tougher to overcome when you're a team that's playing from behind. The Miami Dolphins, to their credit, got themselves in position, but just as Dimitri Patterson talked about earlier, games are won and lost the majority of the time in the NFL in the last 6 minutes of a football game. If you can make more plays than your opponent in that span, you're usually going to come out victorious, and the Dolphins didn't do that yesterday.
Absolutely. Let's stay with the wide receivers. Go to Mike Wallace. Here's what he said after the game yesterday on what's preventing the Dolphins from coming away with wins.
We just had to execute, man. I know it sounds like we always say the same thing, but when we put in positions to win a football game, we have to kill a football game. It was 3-minute, 4-minute offense. We have to finish the football game. We can't have turnovers right there and give them the football game.
Common theme, Sam, hearing a lot of the same stuff from the guys. No secret yesterday.
Hearing a lot of the same things. We're getting the same results. When you look at the third down efficiency, the Dolphins were 3 of 13. They didn't keep the drives going. And when you have a football team like this, Mario Williams used to get into the quarterback and turning the ball over. We talked about it all. This football team, the Buffalo Bills, they always seem to come up with big plays, whether it's interception return. That's been the key thing for this Buffalo Miami Dolphins football team and the rivalry over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and it's kind of the way the Bills have operated all season long as well. Lastly, let's hear from Ryan Tannehill. After the game last night, his mindset after the tough loss, which of course was the third straight for the Finns.
You know, we're in a tough spot right now. Three games losing in a row is something that no one wants to go through, but we're here. We have to face it. We have to face the adversity and grow from it. You know, obviously there's two ways we can go right now. We can tank it and keep losing games, or we can turn it around, learn from our mistakes, move forward, and go play a great New England team on the road.
I like that mentality, John. Can go one of two directions right now, and that's why you sort of talk about it like it's gut check time.
It's the only way you can approach it. You know, you're the leader of the team. You're the quarterback. You have to lead by example. So you have to come right back out, and you have to put Buffalo behind you, as hard as that is, and come back and try to play a clean football game. And I said this before the Buffalo game. I thought the Miami Dolphins would have to play their best game to beat Buffalo. It holds true this week against New England up on the road. If you're going to knock the king off the hill, you have to play your best football game of the year, and that means eliminate the turnovers and get clean execution down the stretch.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Attention fanatics, you can now ride Tri-Rail to and from all Dolphin home games. Avoid traffic and save money on parking. Visit dolphins.com/Tri-Rail for details. Spoke to a couple people at Sun Life yesterday. They did the Tri-Rail thing. They were raving about it. They said it worked real easy, nice, quick. You get in, you get out. Hey, what could be bad? Take a break. When we come back in 2 minutes, we'll get to some more of your questions. Texts at 347-347. Also, check in with Tristan. You're watching the Finnsiders on Fox Sports Florida, and you're listening on dolphins.com and the Finnsiders Radio Network.
We return to the Finnsiders now.
Dolphins first and 10. Tannehill back to throw, stepping into the pocket, over the middle. He's got a wide open, gets it at the goal line. Down! Oh! Touchdown!
Oh! Oh, my goodness!
Brandon Gibson went over the top for that one. Wow, was that an athletic touchdown?
Great play by Brandon Gibson. Two touchdown receptions in the game. He did it last year against the Jets, by the way. As a member of the Rams, had a two-touchdown game. I mentioned the stat a few times going back to yesterday. It's just terribly depressing. First wide receiver to have two touchdown catches in a game for the Dolphins since Marty Booker on Thanksgiving 2006.
Wow.
That's a long time.
It's a long time.
The first time you hear that stat, it kind of shakes you your core a little bit. And that kind of tells the story of where this team has been with wide receivers the last 7-8 years or so.
Yes, it's definitely been one of those guys by committee. When you look back and you have a guy like Brandon Marshall, you sit here and it's like, he didn't have four touchdowns in one game, the way that he can catch the ball and put him in. But, you know, it just goes to show you need that quarterback to be able to deliver the ball to those wide receivers. And now, you know, it was great to see. And what about when you look at Brandon Gibson, that somebody said it was like the closest thing to the Nat Moore doing the
helicopter. Yeah, that's right.
the spin.
Not bad at all as he went over the top to get in. Somebody mentioned, by the way, obviously when we talk about these multiple touchdown games to the receivers, Pro Bowl does not count.
Yeah, Brandon went off for Pro Bowl.
Pro Bowl does not count.
Not at all.
When it comes to that kind of stuff. All right, time for one quickie with Tristan Jones over the Metro PCS Comment Center.
Oh, boy. Okay. lots of questions about the play calling yesterday. So Betty White III would like to know if we should be worried about it.
Worried about the play calling. We can discuss it. I mean, worrying about it isn't going to do you much good. We can discuss it. We can talk about it. And when we come back, we'll start the second hour of the show talking a little bit more about that decision to throw the football on a second down and 8 late in the game. Mario Williams, of course, beats Tyson Clabo. Daniel Thomas gets blocked into Ryan Tannehill. He goes to throw the ball. Williams swipes it. Ball on the ground. Recovered by the other Williams. And that was pretty much the ball game. We'll talk about that to start the second hour. If you've been watching on television, appreciate you joining us. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5 on Fox Sports Florida. If you're listening on the radio or online, we'll continue that conversation when we come back right after this.
The Finnsiders.
I'm always interested by the people that text in or they'll tweet at you. They'll go to the live chat and they'll say, "That's it, I'm done." What is that?
They're one win away from coming back.
No, I know. Always are. I get it. You're angry. And I'm all for being angry and being upset and being frustrated. You have every right to be all those things. It's always like, come on, I don't take you seriously. And if you're out, then be out, man. Why are you going to text me and tell me about it? That's the kind of fan that gets made fun of. You know, people like to rip South Florida sports fan. The guy that says, I quit because the team is 3-3. Come on.
Life must be really tough for those people.
Yeah.
Life has got to be tough.
Because if you hit a speed bump, you're out. You quit. That's it. Had a bad day at work. Quitting my job. Come on.
Sad.
Don't be silly. 347-347 if you want to text in, even if they're silly texts. 1-855-GO-FINS if you want to call in. The news of the day, of course, not only the Dolphin-Bill game yesterday, but the Bryant-McKinney trade today. The Dolphins acquiring the former Hurricane from the Baltimore Ravens for what we've been told by Baltimore is a late conditional draft pick, so not much. And in order to make room on the roster, the Dolphins waive Josh Kadu, certainly a guy that could be brought back on the practice squad. I don't think he's played in enough games to prevent him from being in that role if nobody claims him on waivers. My quick, easy, basic take on the McKinney trade is I don't know that he's any kind of true answer for the Dolphins, but I like that they're trying something. I like that they're not just sitting here and saying we have to continue to do things the same, because obviously the same hasn't been good enough up front on the offensive line. But McKinney's acquisition certainly opens up a lot of questions. Where will he play? Where will Jonathan Martin play? What will happen with Tyson Klebo? Will he be ready to play this week? We don't have any of those answers yet. And in fact, Joe Philbin's daily media address took place before this trade happened today, so we haven't even heard from him on it. Tomorrow, obviously, we'll hear from Joe Philbin. We'll hear what he has to say about all of this, but some interesting questions to be answered as time goes on.
I think there are more questions than answers right now. We do know definitively he will be part of the Miami Dolphins, but where he will play, how fast will he be up to speed to play, what kind of shape is Bryant McKinney in? I think there's a lot of things that we're going to understand over the next 3 or 4 days, and to see if Bryant can come in, number one, and be able to play in the first week that he gets here. That's going to be a tough task, but not impossible. So at least the Miami Dolphins felt the need to go out, look around the league, and see who can help this team immediately. And they found Bryant McKinney still there, being unused by the Baltimore Ravens, who made a move earlier a couple weeks ago to get a tackle from the Jacksonville Jaguars to come in. And his performance for Baltimore wasn't that stellar. So you'd have to think the Miami's trying to do something, Sam, to improve the offensive line protection, number one, for Ryan Tannehill, because that is paramount right now. You cannot go through the season and take the number of hits and take the number of sacks that Ryan Tannehill is taking right now and still be able to be efficient down the field, be able to be healthy in week 11, week 12, and week 13. And you hope that the games at that point are of high value. They mean a lot to the Miami Dolphins. That means this team has to turn it around. They have to turn it around against the number one team in the AFC East, and that's on the road at New England this Sunday.
Yeah, you're definitely right. And the thing, making some type of move, you know, that was encouraging, you know, to finally see. You know, it had to go on for 6 weeks, 7 weeks before, you know, we finally got there. But we're there now. So my only concern with Bryant McKinney, and it's been a concern when he was at Minnesota, and we saw it last year, even with the Ravens, you know, it took, I think, about over 8-9 weeks before he can get on the field because of the lack of preparation for Bryant McKinney. But when you get slapped in the face like this as a professional, not being able to play, they bring somebody else in, and then you're sitting the bench, you need a fresh start. The same thing when he left Minnesota and went to Baltimore, you know, he jumped right in there, and the offense, it took off behind Bryant McKinney. So if it can do the same thing here, you know, taking off with Bryant McKinney, it'll plug and help fill some holes that, you know, that we see concerned on the offensive line, and we'll be able to see all the different play calling and all the different things, because now you have a guy that can protect your blind side and your franchise quarterback, and you have that confidence that he can protect the blind side of him, and now you can do a lot more schematically things, you know, from the offensive standpoint. So just want to see how he comes in, if he's healthy, if he's in shape, and if he's ready to go. And then that's when we can find those other four guys that's going to solidify this offensive line for the rest of the year.
By the way, somebody texted in, I might be done, hoping the Finsiders can save me. We'll do what we can.
We're going to say you wrong.
We'll do everything we can. All right, let's go out to the phones. 1-855-GO-FINS, 1-855-GO-FINS. Jellyfish is out on Miami Beach. What's up, Fish? How are you?
Good, guys. First of all, I'd just like to apologize for being trying to be an armchair coach, but I'm just questioning why, with 2.5 minutes left in the game and you're ahead, why wouldn't you put the ball on the ground, run it, try to get a first down, run the clock out, if not, plucked it away and let your defense win it? Knowing that you have a history of your quarterback losing the ball because he doesn't have much protection.
Yeah, no, first of all, don't apologize. I mean, that's your job as a fan, is to be able to ask those kinds of questions. Nothing to be sorry for. We've discussed it a lot on the postgame show on Dolphins Monday opening drive earlier today. Haven't really gotten into it as much on this show. There's no doubt it's the biggest play of the game. And it's 2nd and 8. You're trying to run out the last 4 minutes of the game. You got a 1-point lead. Mario Williams beats Tyson Klebo, strips the ball out of Ryan Tannehill, who's kind of sandwiched because Daniel Thomas had been blocked into Tannehill. That certainly didn't help things. And Kyle Williams recovers the fumble for Buffalo. It eventually sets up Dan Carpenter's 31-yard field goal. It's a good question, and Joe Philbin's answer today was interesting. He gave a lot more detail than he normally does when explaining something, and he said that he thought back to last Sunday, and Thad Lewis, late in the game against Cincinnati, led his team back at the end of regulation and tied it and sent it to overtime. And so I guess Philbin was saying that, you know, hey, we didn't want that to happen. We wanted to be aggressive. We are aggressive. We're going to be aggressive. He and Mike Sherman both kind of said today, it's not a complicated play call. It's something they run all the time, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously, in hindsight, it worked out as poorly as possible, because even if there's just a sack there and not a fumble, they still have to use a timeout. You still live to fight another day. But obviously, it's an easy one to question from the outside. There's no doubt about that.
Immediately, my gut was telling me to run the football three times, put the onus on the Buffalo Bills and Doug Marrone to use their timeouts or not, but get that clock down as close to the 2-minute warning as possible. Let Brandon Fields come on the field, punt the ball. At the worst, they're going to get it to the 20-yard line, and let a guy that hasn't played a whole lot of NFL football and taken a lot of snaps in those situations come down and try to beat you at home against a defense that seemed like they had the better hand of it yesterday. That was my gut before the play was even called. I was expecting the Dolphins to run it there no matter what look they were going to get, because even if it was an 8-man front, if it was a bare look front, you may crease something. You may get an opportunity. At least you're going to have that clock go. Now, the worst case scenario happens, Sam, to the Miami Dolphins.
Yes.
You put yourself in a position where you think you have a good play call. You drop back to pass, and as Ryan is cocking his right arm to throw it, he gets it stripped from his right side. It's so bad. The worst thing that could have happened for the Miami Dolphins was to turn the football over. I mean, you'd have taken a sack 10 out of 10 times, because the clock's still going to run. Now, if the Bills are going to take a timeout, so be it. Now you're going to run it on third down, punt the football away. That would have been the best scenario, was the sack. The worst scenario was to cough the football up. So even to expose yourself to that, it's hindsight, but your gut tells you, make those guys earn it, because they weren't going to earn it on the Miami Dolphins defense the way they were playing.
Well, you know, the one thing, we can sit back and, you know, all of us are Monday morning quarterbacks, we always say it, but, you know, I like what the coaches were trying to do. They were trying to finish the football game.
Just to interrupt for a half second, if that goes for 11 yards, the pass, everybody thinks it's the greatest call in history.
Right.
And, oh, we finally have a coach who wants to go for it. And, oh, there's finally aggressiveness. That is a fair thing to point right. out, even if you don't agree with the call.
Yeah, even if you don't agree with the call, you know, I'm sitting here. Yes, we're leading. Yes, we have everything seem like, yeah, you will like to run the ball. Yeah. And it's just like you said, Jesse, seeing Thad Lewis last week take his football team. But if you have a coaching staff that they's like, look, we've been moving the ball up and down the field all. We had some routes open. And we move the ball and we go down and we score. Guess what? Game over, set, match. Everybody's happy. Everybody's fine. Okay, cool. Yeah, he was aggressive. But, you know, like you said, the one thing that really hurt all of this was we fumbled the ball. Because nobody's talking about using the best weapon that we have on this football. Y'all know who that is, right?
Yeah, the guy that would have punted the football.
Yeah, the guy who was punting. I mean, he's leading the National Football League in yards punted. And if you do, you run the ball, you pin him deep. You saw what happened, you know, with the punt where the rookie Don Jones, he goes, the ball is all the way back on the 15. He would have put that Lewis back and put them in a situation. And I think this defense
that they were just in a couple of series ago.
Right. And the same thing with the Atlanta Falcons, I believe, here at home. Guess what? They sealed the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the defense could have did the same thing again yesterday, but the ball got stripped,
yeah,
sacked.
It was the one thing that couldn't happen.
The one thing that couldn't happen
was that you turn the ball over there. Now, all of that being said, and I agree, I like my chances. You know, the Bills having to go 60 yards or whatever for a field goal against this defense with 2 minutes or so left in that situation. The defense did have a big shot yesterday, though. They had 3rd and 4 after the fumble at the 28-yard line, and Fred Jackson picked it up. They would have had to kick the field goal with probably about 2.5 minutes left. That's a big, big difference,
huge,
obviously, when it comes to the end of the game. They pick up that first down. The Dolphins, end up having to use their last timeout. They're able to milk a lot more time off the clock. Carpenter hits the field goal with 33 seconds to go. And then, obviously, Marcus Thigpen gave you a fighting chance on offense.
Definitely.
That was a great return.
Right.
You know, all right, so you're 1st and 10 at your own 46 with 23 seconds to go. You had a near interception on first down. The Hartline, questionable pass interference that wasn't called on second down. The third down, a little bit of a broken play. Hartline somehow got behind everybody, and Tannehill overshot him, though he was under pressure and on the run. And then the incomplete Hail Mary on 4th and 10. I don't want to dwell on like positives, obviously, after this, but that was an unbelievable effort by Tannehill, by the way. Just on that 4th and 10. I don't know
just
how
to get
he
the
got
football
pass
off.
That was pretty special and incredible stuff. I know nobody wants to talk about that, but yeah, the Mario Williams fumble, man, it's a big play as there was in that game yesterday. Back out to the phones. Rick is in Cooper City. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah. One thing I want to know is why did the guy pick up the ball on that punt? The coaches should know better than that. He should be coached better than that. Anybody
he is coached him? Better than that. He made a mistake. He's a rookie that went out there and he had one of those, you know, bonehead moments or whatever. But that you can't in a million years put that on any coach ever. When a player goes out there and does something like that, they know the rules. And look, he's a rookie. He's a kid, you know, head spinning, game moves fast, all that kind of thing. Huge play in the game. You know, I appreciate you bringing it up for that sense. But I'm not putting that one on the coaches. I'll put that one on the player every time. But go ahead.
All right. All right. Let's see. What else was wrong? Everybody's harping on that call where Tannehill dropped back with a little bit left in the game. Even I was sitting there with my buddies and all the other guys that won tickets, and we're all saying, run the ball, run the ball. I understand Phil wants to be aggressive, but there's time to be aggressive and there's time to just tuck it and let your defense play the game. They played a fantastic game. They only gave up one offensive drive. I mean, come on.
No, I think – there you go. You hit it on the head, Rick.
Yep.
And that's where I'm with you.
Thanks for the call.
You got to remember the context of the game. And the context of the game was Buffalo could not move the ball. With one exception, like he said. He said it exactly right. And that's why I would have run the ball. That's why I would have been okay punting in that situation. I'm all for being aggressive. I personally, this is just me talking. This is Jesse being an idiot. But, like, I think the way your defense is playing on that day, that quarterback on that day, that's the reason I'm okay playing a conservative.
Yeah, and when you look at the Dolphins all day long averaging 5 yards a carry, you know, running the ball a couple more times, the first play you get 2 yards, and if you come back again and you get 5, and then you go get – that's a first down, so you're marching down. You're going to be able to run the clock down and make those guys utilize those timeouts and get off the football field, but it didn't happen that way. And, you know, who says that, you know, all of a sudden that they are going to average 5 yards a carry, you know, in that last drive like they were doing previous throughout the first three quarters. It may not happen because you have those 8 guys in the box, and you guys talk about it, Daniel as well as Lamar, they did hit some creases early on those things, but, you know, they may have not been there later on in the game. But, you know, we can't go back. We can't take it forward. All we can do is learn from it. But the encouraging thing, yes, this was one of the worst rush defenses that we're going to play or see throughout the course of the year, and we had some chances to really show this is what we need to do, running the football to give ourselves a chance, and it was a very good showing. Daniel Thomas, I thought, came out at the beginning of the game and ran extremely well.
I just think that, you know, sometimes you have to go with your gut. I'm sure all the pretty charts and this staff does their due diligence. They're prepared for every scenario that comes up in a football game. And they had predetermined if they were in that position, but, you know, at the end of the game, they were going to be aggressive. And they probably had a wide open wide receiver. And if Ryan has another half second, the ball comes out and it's probably good for a first down and you move the chains and you continue on. But at some point in a game, just with the feel that I was watching with, and it's my simple opinion, that there was no way that the Buffalo Bills were going to move 50 or 60 yards. Mm-hmm.
after using their timeouts, if they had the opportunity, not the way the Miami Dolphin defense was playing. And to Rick's point, they did only post one drive of significance, and they gave, you know, they gave them a half a field at that point to do it on. So I just felt that, you know, it was a gut feeling for me that to run it three times, punt it away, put the Miami Dolphin defense on the field, and now roll the dice with that.
I agree. And again, as Sam said, and in fairness to them, if it works, we're all lauding it. It's a great aggressive call.
But I still wouldn't have changed the way I felt.
No, I know. No, I understand. All right, we're running late here, and we're supposed to break. But when Wayne in Pensacola is on the line, I don't think you make him wait through a commercial break. You just go to the phones, you pick it up, and you say, "What's up, Wayne?"
I got a few things, and I got one comment before you cut me off before we finish. You know, that game caused me to burn all that chicken I was smoking. And, you know, unfortunately, guys, I got a little deja vu from last year. We've lost three in a row and lost two at home. And I'm not going to question the coaches calling the plays because I don't get paid to do all that. I trust them. But all this stuff, the talk prior to the break and everything, well, I won't be concerned. Many people say, "Oh, we won't be concerned if we go in 3-2," and these other teams out there somehow managed to bring it up to beat them. Like we should have beat them yesterday, without a doubt. And we had some bad things go our way. And my question is about Bryant McKinney. He's 34 years old. Now, didn't they replace? Didn't they pick up another?
Yeah, they traded for Eugene Monroe the week before they came down here.
And one of the statements that was made, it was McKinney, he was getting tired late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the statements that I heard them say. But, you know, but hopefully, you know, I got all the faith in Joe Philbin and Cam, but these guys got to buy in and click on all eight cylinders and quit breaking down. I can't point it out as just a one, but I'm also worried about our kicker. I know he's only missed two, but look what Dan did yesterday.
And it was 2+50, you know, kind of tough spots. I don't know about that. That's interesting. Thanks, Wayne.
Wait. I got one other thing.
All right. Let me see him miss one inside of 50 before I worry. That fair?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Go Seminoles.
All right. There you go.
Wayne.
How did Louisville do this weekend, Sam?
Hey, we didn't do very well. So,
okay, just check.
Yeah, it's part of it. A lot of other teams didn't do well either.
We won, but I'm not the one getting
A lot of other teams didn't do well either. So.
Yeah, no, that's right. Gators did not do well. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, LSU. Not upset about that.
Yeah. No problem, man. And Popular Community Bank at free mobile banking with text alerts and mobile check deposits. Visit popularcommunitybank.com for details. Popular Community Bank, the human side of banking. Good stuff, Wayne, and everybody else. We'll take a break, come back, continue to talk about the trade, and of course the game yesterday. Your text at 347-347, your phone calls at 1-855-GO-FINS. You're listening to the Finsiders on 940 Wins and Dolphins.com. Welcome back. John Congemi's here. Sam Madison is here, taking your text messages at 347-347. Phone calls at 1-855-GO-FINS. Going through all the texts here. DJ Barakis wants to know why we didn't defer yesterday. He says, "It doesn't make sense this week. Armando has me convinced." Armando Salguero writing about it in his blog on the Herald. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I mean, all week Joe Philbin talked about a fast start. I think that's what it is. They wanted to start fast this week. It was very important to them to start fast against the Buffalo Bills, and so they won the toss. Instead of deferring their option to the second half, they took the football. Obviously, when you throw a pick six there, it's literally the worst thing that can happen in that situation because you're basically giving them the ball to start both halves. I mean, that's essentially what that comes out to. But they wanted to start fast. They obsessed over starting fast. They talked endlessly over starting fast. And if you start fast and if you put your foot on the gas and you do everything you're supposed to do in the first half and you're up multiple scores, you're fine kicking off to open the third quarter because you may have already buried them. I imagine that's what they were thinking.
That's well down on my list, Jesse. There's a lot more things that have to happen in a football game to where if you decide to take the ball with your offense, you have confidence on either side. I would imagine if you're any coach in the NFL, and unless it's a very bad wind game or a weather game or a rain game, that –
probably dictates more whether you defer or you take the football. At home, coming off a bye week, you want to start fast. You've been instilling that in your offense and your defense the entire time. I think you could, you know, literally flip a coin and take either way, because either way, you feel confident with one of those units going out on the football field and setting the tone. That didn't happen against the Buffalo Bills, obviously. Not only were the Miami Dolphins down 7-0, but after a poor choice on a special teams play, that led to Buffalo going up 14-0. So the worst-case scenario for the Miami Dolphins happened on Sunday, yet they were able to fight back and give themselves in position to win the game, you know, at the end. So I don't think that's not real high on my priority list, whether they set their offense out on the football field or deferred to the second half.
Has nothing to do with wins or the losses, but you know what it does do, you go back and you look over the last couple of weeks that the Dolphins did play extremely well. Even though the defense went out first, when the offense went out, guess what? I don't care if it was a field goal or a touchdown, they put points on the board. So now if you put a young quarterback, yes, he's coming back home to his home city where he played high school and went off to Duke eventually, you're going to put pressure on him because now he's down. He's going to have to be down either 3 or down 7. He's going to have to play catch-up. And he's still a young quarterback. A couple of weeks ago, he was on the practice squad, a guy that doesn't have many reps in the National Football League. So if you have that pressure placed on him, all of a sudden have to worry about the family and the friends and all of those different things in the outside element, he's going to make a mistake. So now have an opportunity if the offense, who we wanted to see play fast and start fast, just coming off a bye week, should be fresh. They should go out there and they should do the same thing they've been doing the last couple of weeks.
And most of the time, Sam, as a head coach in any level, the night before the game, you're telling your team, hey, we're going to take the football
right
to start the game. So this is what we want to do. This is why we're doing it. I want you guys to know if we have the choice, if we win the toss, we're taking the football. And the same thing goes on the defensive side. The head coach is standing in front of the team the night before the game saying, listen, or that day, saying, listen, we're going to defer. We're going to have the defense set the tone for us. I want you guys to get a 3-and-out. We're going to get good field position, and we're going to take that opening drive down and put points on the scoreboard. So it's not like it's an unknown to Ryan Tannehill that all of a sudden, you know, he knows 2 seconds before the game or before it's kicked that the offense is going to go out on the football field. I think that's a predetermined thing that's communicated, so you know both sides of the football are ready for anything.
Absolutely. 8555 go Fins. 1-855 GOFINS. Rick and Davey is up next on the phone.
Good evening, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good.
All right. How about you?
Very frustrated Dolphin fans, longtime Dolphin fan, and I just got to get a few things off my chest about yesterday and something that I heard today. You guys covered the coach's press conference, and he said a couple of things that I wasn't happy with. And one is, you know, our third pick in the draft and our probably our best defensive player in Cameron Wake, and he has him on snap counts. I didn't like that answer that he gave this afternoon, and I'm sorry. I mean, when you give up, you know, two picks and move up to get a guy who's supposed to be a stud like Cameron, like Deion Jordan, and you got a stud like Cameron Wake, and you have him on snap counts?
Hold on, Rick. I'll let you keep going here. We'll go back and forth, but hold on, a couple things. Cam Wake is not 100%. He cannot go the whole game. He's on a snap count because he's hurt, and he can't play more than that number of snaps. As for Deion Jordan, you're not alone in saying that kind of thing. I just don't agree. If Deion Jordan were ready to play every down, he would play every down. He's not, and that's okay. Deion Jordan, and this is the analogy I always use, I know you'd trade it up to get him in the first round, but he's here for the long haul. They draft Deion Jordan to stick him in their portfolio for a few years and let him mature. They don't day trade a guy that they take number 3 overall. You don't buy and sell, you know, by the hour on a guy like Deion Jordan. He's a long-term investment, and they're going to treat him that way. And when he's ready to play more, he'll play more. That would be my answer to those two things. But keep going.
Okay, well, it just reminds me of some of today's baseball managers and executives who have young pitchers on pitch counts. You know, I'm sorry, I'm old enough to.
That's a different thing. That's a different thing altogether. That annoys me too. You know, I hated the Strasburg thing last year. I'm a big baseball fan. I hate, you know, these pitch counts. I get that it's part of the culture of the game. That's not what's happening with Deion Jordan and Cameron Wake. They're not trying to limit them because they're afraid they're going to get hurt if they're out there longer, like the Nationals did with Steven Strasburg last year, or like basically every manager and executive does with every young pitcher right now. They're doing it for two different reasons for two different guys. Again, it's Cam Wake because he's not able to go more than that. He is not physically at that point right now. And with Deion Jordan, it's just because he's not at that point to be able to contribute that much. It's not a Steven Strasburg kind of situation with either one of those guys.
Okay. Well, the other thing he said in the press conference, and I didn't agree with, when asked about the play on the fumble, on the strip,
yeah.
He said, well, because we only gained 2 yards on... Well, so what? But, you know, we have been doing it 5 yards a pop. But let me tell them this. Maybe if we would stop doing that stupid stretch run play and zone and you know, that we try to do when we have offensive linemen who aren't mobile, we're just straightforward pass, I mean, bull pass run blockers, not the zone blocking. We're not mobile. That's when we were getting 5 yards a pop running behind the left side. Maybe that's why we only gained 2 yards. But still, if you were doing 5 yards a pop, you stick with it. And if you don't make it, you take time off the clock, you punt, and make that young kid drive. And my last point is this, on the Hail Mary. And this is the thing that's driving me nuts about Tannehill. And I love Tannehill, okay? Like, don't get me wrong. But he has become a one-sided quarterback and a one-read quarterback. He doesn't scan the field. I noticed that on that play, there was only one guy lined up in front of Brian Hartline. The other three receivers were on the right. The guy lined up in front of Hartline blitzed, but he never saw that because he never looked that way. If he would have seen that, Hartline was wide open. And then on the Hail Mary itself, it seemed to me like Brian Gibson gave up on the play. He stood there, and he had finished going to the ball, and then he just kind of took a faint swipe at the ball. Those are the two things that I noticed on that Hail Mary. One, that he's not scanning the field. He's becoming a one-sided, one-read quarterback and looking down and staring down his receivers. And two, that I don't think Gibson made a full attempt on the Hail Mary itself.
All right. Good evening, gentlemen. You too, Rick. Thanks as always. I don't know about Gibson and the Hail Mary. I have to take a closer look at it. But, I mean, look, it's a Hail Mary situation. It's just kind of a free-for-all down there. It's not ever anything that looks good. I doubt he didn't make an effort for the ball. That just wouldn't make any sense. What about the scanning the field stuff? And Rick, you know, everything that he had to say about Tannehill. What have you seen, you know, this year?
Well, in terms of scanning the field in that situation, you probably... If you're going to throw the football off the line of scrimmage, that means you're in a lateral situation, and I'm not so sure the Miami Dolphins had dialed that play up for the last play. I believe it was to buy time in the pocket to throw the football up for grabs in a Hail Mary situation in the end zone. So I don't think Ryan was ever looking that way because that wasn't part of the Hail Mary play. If it were a lateral type of situation, then yes, Ryan probably would have looked for the first open guy to get the football to and have Brian start the laterals and get as many yards as he can and wait for the picket fence to come and start laddering the football back. I don't think that was the play call. I think the play was designed to get free running guys down into the end zone and have a Hail Mary situation to try to go up and get the football and high point it and get lucky, get a tip, and come down with the touchdown to win the game. So I think we're talking maybe apples and oranges when you talk about that wasn't the design for him to hit somebody off the line of scrimmage and then start the picket fence and laterals and try to get as many yards as you can. So there's a couple ways of going about that.
I think he might have been referring to the play before the Hail Mary, but I'm not sure. He was kind of ranting and raving. It was hard to follow along. I don't think you can fault Tannehill at all on the last play of the game, the Hail Mary. The fact that he was able to not only get a pass off, but get a pass that got to the end zone off was a small right. miracle. I mean, he was under duress from the get-go. So, I don't know. Obviously, not the way anybody wanted that one to go down. But to me, you get the ball back. You know, what was the situation at the end of the race? 23 seconds to go at your own 46-yard line, no timeouts. You got a chance. Don't get me wrong. You've got a chance. But you're in that position, and the things that put you in that position, to me, are more fair game than what happens after that. Now, look, was it the best four plays? No, of course not. And it would have been wonderful and magical if they would have been able to come up with points there, or even complete a pass, for that matter. But getting in that position, to me, is far more discussion-worthy than what happened in that possession. Why were they in that position? That's the stuff that needs to be
Correct.
Talked about. That's the stuff that needs to be discussed. Because once you get to the point where you're just basically, you know, throwing up prayers, it's not really the same thing. Join the Dolphins Orange Pages today, and you can take advantage of special offers and network with other business professionals through the Dolphins Business Alliance. Visit orangepages.miamidolphins.com. We'll take a break. When we come back, more of your questions, more comments, more discussion. Oh, we'll do a little chat's choice as well. Check in with Tristan. Let those guys vote on what they want us to talk about. You're listening to the Finsiders on 940 Wins and Dolphins.com.
Now, back to the Finsiders, your all-access pass to the 2013 Dolphins.
Welcome back with John Kinjemi, Sam Madison. I'm Jesse Agler. Here's the text of the day. Fins are not looking good. No, no, they're not. Everybody knows that. Got to get better. Got to get better in a hurry. It has not been a good 3 weeks, no doubt about it. Man, they were ripping Rick and Davey, the text messages. They were just fighting. Really? Oh, they were not fans of Rick and Davey. They did not like the bad baseball analogy.
The chatters weren't impressed either, yeah, got to say. So wait, is this a breakthrough? The chatters and the texters were on the same page?
There, yeah.
They're in agreement?
They teamed up at the caller.
Ooh.
I like that.
I don't mind that at all.
Taking sides. Taking sides.
You should have waited till tomorrow when Bo could have lectured.
No, he won't.
Oh, no, he's out.
Oh, no, he's
he's inactive still.
I just thought I'd bring that up.
He's back on IR.
A little levity.
IR designated for return. 347-347 to text in 1-855-GO-FINS. If you want to call in, plenty to discuss, obviously, coming off this thing. Ben Volen of the Boston Globe used to cover the Dolphins, of course, for the Palm Beach Post as the Dolphins and the Patriots get ready to face off on Sunday. He tweeted a few minutes ago, the Patriots now have an open roster spot. Will be funny if they use it to claim linebacker Josh Kadu, waived today by the Dolphins. I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised at all. And everyone will freak out when it happens, and it won't be... There would be no point to freak out. But they will. Don't worry about it. It's not going to...
Hi, I'm Bill. What do you know? That's how that'll start off.
Yeah, exactly. Nice to meet you. They'll cut him before the end of the meeting. Right.
Don't eat lunch.
Terrible. Yeah, exactly. All right. Chat's choice time. How about that? The guys in the live chat at Dolphins.com voting on what they want us to discuss next. We'll start here. Brandon Gibson, top red zone target, ? Expectations for Bryant McKinney, Rishard Matthews, Tannehill's pocket awareness, Lamar Miller and Daniel Thomas, and the state of the AFC East. The people have spoken 48%. I want to talk about the hot topic, Ryan Tannehill's pocket awareness. All right, we got our quarterback here, John Kinjemi. Better yesterday. They definitely did some things to move him around a little bit, all that kind of thing. Step in the right direction, more of the same. And how easy of a thing is that to improve as a quarterback?
It's very difficult. I mean, you have to have your tentacles up if you're Ryan Tannehill, the way the first, you know, six games have gone for him. There's pressure coming in a lot of different directions. And I think the Miami Dolphins did a nice job of getting him outside the pocket a little bit yesterday. And Ryan did a good job of getting himself out of the pocket sometimes and extending plays. That pass to Brandon Gibson for the touchdown where he escaped up the middle and slid to the right side and kept the play alive and found his wide receiver in the back of the end zone. That was nice to see, and it was nice to see them actually do some bootlegs and do some play action where Ryan was getting on the outside. But the pocket awareness is something that, you know, you have to grow into as a quarterback, and I'm sure that Ryan is learning the hard way because he's taken one too many shots over the last couple of weeks. And even though the sacks were a little bit lighter yesterday, the hits weren't. The hits were up on Ryan Tannehill, even though the stats don't show that and they don't reflect that in the final statistics. If you were watching the football game, he was battered and bruised a couple of times after delivering the football. So his pocket awareness, believe it or not, is getting better. That last play, the last thing you want to do is expose yourself to a hit. And I think that Ryan was caught in the middle of taking the football from a protected spot and getting it out to where he was cocking his arm to throw the football. That's something you can't control. That's just bad fortune and bad luck that, you know, the lineman in Williams was able to get there quickly as he was taking the football from a protected position and cocking the football and getting it ready to throw. So that one you really just have to put up to bad luck.
What about the quarterback draws? Great opportunity.
No, hey, I was all for it. I thought that was a great call. I said we were watching the game, actually, from our vantage point, and I said to my executive producer, Eddie, at the time, that he was going to go to a quarterback draw. I said it was perfect.
Who?
My executive producer, Eddie.
Eddie? You haven't met Eddie? Oh, the guy that works at the stadium.
Yeah, the stadium life guy.
Got it.
I nudged him and said, this is going to be a quarterback draw. It's going to be perfect. You have the right setup, the right look for it. And I think if Ryan goes to his left
right.
I'm not so sure if anybody gets touched on the play, but he actually went right and got crunched.
It was a frustrating moment because it was there. I had the binoculars out on that one. I was looking right at it. And easy to say. From, you know, the press box.
Oh, everything's easier to say when we're watching it from. But I thought it was the perfect call for that situation.
Yeah. No, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Somebody texted in about Michael Agnew, and they said, why aren't we using him the way he was used in college? He was always kind of, you know, split out in the slot.
Not
now
college.
We're using him as – it's exactly right. Now we're using him as a blocker. And by the way, I thought he did a very decent job yesterday in some of those blocking situations. He has not shown that he is capable of being split out wide or in the slot and run up the field and get open and make the catch. He has not shown that ability yet. He has shown some ability to block, which is a great credit to him for working on that, something he was not known for coming into the season, coming into his NFL career. He's gotten much better as a blocker, and he deserves a huge, huge pat on the back for that. But he has not shown the ability to go out and do those things he did at Missouri.
And the things that we always talk about, win the one-on-one matchups, and that's what he's going to be. He's going to be in a situation that he's going to have to line up one-on-one with a safety or a linebacker, and we need you to win that one-on-one matchup. You look at yesterday, Brandon Gibson in the slot, lined up against the nickelback. He runs in. He runs a whip route. I would say in that situation, because the outside receiver, he's gone. He's cleared everything out. Just run a nice, quick rollout on your out route, and you're going to have about 15 yards to play with, and Ryan can get the ball. But when you be lackadaisical in your route running, and the cornerback, the defensive back that's covering you, he sees you turn inside. There's only one other place that you can go. That's back outside. The defensive back puts his foot in the ground and comes out. And that is what Agnew would have to deal with. He would have to deal with people sitting on him, because when you look at the college perspective, the things that he was doing in college, he was much bigger than everybody. He was much taller than everybody. And then you're talking about a kid that was covering him, probably was a third string coming out of high school, yeah, that had no business even being on the football field, and he's going to make those plays over him because he is a senior, and that person probably was a freshman. Now you're talking about the best athletes in the country, in the world, in that matter, and you can't get away with the little things that you do when you was doing in college. I always used to tell the defensive backs, guys, look, he's running college route. He's looking over his left shoulder. Guess what? When he look over the left shoulder, he's gonna break to the right. So those are little things that they have to understand, that they have to, and the coaches can't do them. They can sit there and show you on the film every day that you're doing the same thing over and over. And even as a defensive back, I would go to some of the wide receivers like, hey, I think you need to change up. You need to do this because this is what I'm telling my guys, and this is what I'm seeing. And if I'm seeing it, I'm pretty sure the other team that's scouting you're going to be seeing it, and it's going to come back, and it's going to haunt not only you, it's going to haunt the team. So, you know, all these little things, they start to pile up. Yeah. If you be lackadaisical on one route in the ball, you never know who's getting the ball, because as a quarterback, John,
yeah,
sometimes it's predetermined where you're going to put the ball and give your wide receiver the best opportunity, but sometimes you're not. So, you know, it happens, and Agnew, he just have to continue to keep fighting, and we'll see what happens.
Sam, there's only so many footballs that can go around.
That's it.
And right now, the way Charles Clay's playing at the position, everybody else is standing
in line. They don't need it.
There's a billion issues here with this team. Not a billion, but there are plenty of issues with this team and enough things to talk about and say that need to be improved upon. Getting Michael Agnew more involved in the passing game, not on that list. It's not. And again, give him all the credit in the world for really working on the blocking and getting stronger and being in the right place and doing all those are tough things to do,
right.
And he has done them. They're spreading the ball around really, really well. I told you yesterday coming into the game, they got four guys on pace to have 900 receiving yards.
Correct.
That's insane. And you know, that's not one of the issues right now. Keep the quarterback up. Get rid of those turnovers. Stop making those big mistakes that cost you in the game. Those are the things you got to be focused on, not getting Michael Agnew more involved. I think that's fair. 347-347 to text in, 1-855-GO-FINS to call in. Really good conversation with Dimitri Patterson earlier on in the show, first hour. If you missed it, I encourage you to check it out at dolphins.com. Just a good, serious football conversation with him, and it was great to see him back out on the field yesterday. Speaking of cornerbacks, though, you know, I have a very special place in my heart for Vontae Davis. Obviously, he's no longer here, but just one of the best guys I've ever come across. As sweet a kid as there is.
DB.
And as everybody, you know, who knows anything knows about, you know, the guy. He's got a great kind of personality. He's just sort of out there in his own little universe. He does his own thing. This isn't a shot. This is just the reality of Vontae.
Right.
Like, he exists in Vontae land. And he's just always happy, always smiling. He looks like a guy that's never had a bad day. And I'm sure most people have seen or heard this by now, but it's just too good not to enjoy it just for a moment. We need a little chuckle. It's been a tough day. It's been a tough 2 days, you know, for the Dolphins. And Vontae, by the way, played his tail off last night as the Colts beat the Broncos. But after the game, you know, he's on NBC, and Michelle Tafoya is interviewing him, you know, and talking about the great job that Indy's defense did last night in slowing down, you know, the most potent offense in the National Football League. Again, they played Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos, and here's that Q&A between Michelle Tafoya and Vontae Davis.
How did this defense, what did they have in their minds coming in to face this offensive juggernaut, if you will?
Well, we had a good week of practice. We prepared really hard for Tom Brady. So I think it just carried over from practice into the game.
You got to be listening carefully or you won't catch it.
So they beat not only the Denver Broncos, but the New England Patriots last night.
Two for one job.
Nice.
Bless
they
him.
Took down Tom Brady.
That's
and
beautiful.
Peyton Manning. Time
Come
for our
on,
final
man,
thoughts.
Let's go.
The fastest 2 minutes in the show.
All right, John, what do you got?
Oh, hang in there, Dolphin fans. Hang in there because this win will be that much sweeter on this Sunday if the Miami Dolphins can rally, get themselves, pick themselves off the ground and go up to New England and win. So you're hoping that the Miami Dolphins, I said this last week, They haven't come close to playing the game that they're capable of, and you just hope that they can rally and get back on the winning track because I think everybody needs a W right now.
Bro, I think you took the words right out of my mouth. Hang in there, but, you know, tonight is a Monday night football game with the Vikings going to see New York. Look at those two football teams and look at their records. And we could be there, but we could be a lot better. But, you know, it's going to get better, and hopefully Brian McKinney can come down to South Florida and deliver some of that magic that he did, like he did at the University of Miami. And, you know, welcome home, and we wish the best for you, and come help us win some football games, Brian.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on all that. Very nice. By the way, that Monday night game between the Vikings and the Giants can be heard right here on 940 Wins. The guy who texted in about Agnew, he said, thanks for answering the question. Just another look for defenses, that's all. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But again, it's
right.
Not a problem right now. But
no.
I understand where you're coming from, and I appreciate it. Jeff Darling taking a swing by tomorrow. We'll go around the NFL with him. We'll talk about all these injuries. My goodness, we didn't even get to that today. Some very serious injuries all around the National Football League. We'll do that tomorrow at 5 right here on 940 Wins and Dolphins.com.